Welcome, welcome, welcome to the School of Radiance, the place to be for all things skin, rejuvenation, slowing aging, and becoming our most beautiful, radiant selves, all in the process. Healthy skin, radiant skin, is actually a byproduct of what's going on in the inside. But of course, we talk all about skincare and rejuvenation options as well. With myself as your expert mentor, in these things, with over 20,000 rejuvenation procedures performed and a double board certified aesthetic nurse specialist since 2011 and academic researcher. Be sure to hang out with me over at the School of Radiance podcast, check out some of my research. And for those of you seeking one-on-one guidance where we can connect just like this, share with me what your skin goals are, what some of your current practices are. And during that time, we will unpack many things that may need some course correction, as well as this is how you receive the customized approach. The customized cake recipe, what to do at home, what to do in clinic, as well as ongoing support, is all encompassed in a one-on-one session with me. For those of you who are curious about the icing on the cake, this is where I teach my 7-week tutorials. They're recorded live and you are invited to join with your questions, and I answer those questions, which is a lot of fun. Or I take you into my restroom and I show you exactly how to use your products, from skincare, makeup, hair care, hair growth stimulating options, at home peels for the face and body, as well as getting into more advanced layers like skin cycling with antioxidants, peptides, retinol, hyaluronic acid, all sorts of great things. As well as my tutorials is where I teach my dermal rolling demos and different at-home technologies that are incredible for supporting your skin. So join my 7-week skincare tutorials. These are also seasonally specific because each season, the skin does require different things, as well as there are different things that we might want to approach in the clinic. Now, for those of you who are looking for that cherry on top experience, you've done the skincare work with me, you know how to apply your products, you're looking for those deeper layers. What is radiance? How can we become more radiant? What does the radiant mindset look like? How do we present ourselves? How do we talk? How do we communicate? How do we really cultivate a beautiful, radiant life with ourselves, our loved ones, our family members, and of course, our professional colleagues? The deep-rooted why behind wanting to become our most beautiful selves is to enhance our confidence. And from that, we also have the opportunity to then create a greater community with other like-minded individuals with shared values. In the School of Radiance membership, I teach you how to be in this specific energy, to be like a magnet for other people that are also operating in a radiant way. There are lots of us, and you are warmly invited to join the club. I really look forward to connecting with many of you, seeing you in a one-on-one session, in my skincare tutorials, and of course, the School of Radiance membership. Tune in for regular episodes on the School of Radiance podcast. If you have any questions, you're curious about which option is right for you, you are warmly invited to email me directly at info@theschoolofradiance.com. And don't forget to check out my free 30-minute training, all on skin and biohacking and some of the research to help support slowing aging and get better skin from the inside out. Have a great day, and I look forward to connecting with you very soon. Welcome to the Rachel Varga podcast. Today we have a very special guest. We're going to be talking with Melanie Avalon, and we're going to be getting into, you know, how healthy aging and longevity and biohacking can all play into one another in helping us just present our brightest, most beautiful, gorgeous selves on the inside and out. Let me tell you a little bit about Melanie, but before we get into that, be sure to subscribe on the Rachel Varga Official Facebook page. Find me on the Rachel Varga Official YouTube channel, and be sure to hit that subscribe button so that you know when I go live next, and you can check out all things about
how I can help to continue to support you over at rachelvarga.ca, where one-on-one consultations are currently available to help you optimize what you're doing on the inside and out. And if you're new here, my name is Rachel Varga. I'm so excited to hang out with you today here. And I'm a board certified aesthetic nurse specialist with over 20,000 rejuvenation procedures performed and 10 years of experience in the industry of aesthetic nursing and just helping people look good and feel good in the process. So let me tell you a little bit about Melanie. She's certified as a wine specialist by WSET. Her and I both actually, which is pretty cool. So we're going to geek out on the concept of clean wine a little bit here. And she's also a holistic nutritionist by the AFPA and is a member of Mensa International. Melanie developed the top iTunes app Food Sense Guide to help those with food sensitivities. And she currently runs 3 rapidly growing Facebook groups with over 10,000 members. Welcome, Melanie. It is such a pleasure to have you on the show here today.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm excited. We have so much in common.
I know. And first of all, just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and really kind of what got you into health optimization and clean beauty.
Sure. So I feel like my story is really similar to a lot of people in that when you have your own personal health challenges, you fall into the health rabbit hole and become obsessed with all the things, as I often say. So I had my own personal struggles, fatigue, and just trying to figure out what was going on. And that's sort of what led me into the whole world of biohacking, because I was looking at all these different modalities to feel better in life. And from a dietary lifestyle perspective, adopting a whole foods diet and intermittent fasting were game changers for me in that whole journey. And I ultimately ended up writing a book, What, When, Wine, about it, and then started 2 podcasts, the Intermittent Fasting podcast. So I talk about that topic all the time. And then the Melanie Avalon Biohacking podcast, where I talk about all these or research all of these crazy things. But I've really found where I've come to now that I'm so grateful for is I'm really grateful that I had all those challenges, because it made me find what does matter in life and what does improve your life. And I'm able to share it with so many people. So I'm grateful.
That's beautiful. And if you're tuning in here, this is a live recording and we have Linda. She is hopping on here. Hello, Linda. It's great to see you. And be sure to leave your live comments in your live questions in the comments section here. This is live and interactive. And let's have a little bit of fun talking about health optimization and clean beauty and kicking butt at life and taking names. So Melanie, what are some of your favorite biohacks for healthy aging and longevity?
Okay, so there are so many. It depends how, like, where you want to go on the spectrum. Like, do you want to go more approachable or more crazy?
I totally feel you on this one. Let's just start off in the typical morning routine. What does that look like for you? How do you start your days?
Okay. Cold shower, hands down. It's one of the most powerful things, I think. I'm such a fan of the healing benefits of cold. I don't know if you've met Wim Hof or interviewed him before, but his whole method he does like ice baths and stuff, but just a brief, quick blast of cold at the end of your shower, it activates so many healing things in your body that you don't have to work to activate. Like, if you think about it, something like exercise is super amazing, super anti-aging, great for your body, but it requires a lot of effort. Like, you have to do it. The cold, you just receive it and it automatically turns on epigenetically all of these changes to support your health. So while it can be a little bit miserable for some people, you quickly adapt. So I think that's probably one of the main things for me in the morning. And then light exposure, I think, is so, so huge. So our modern light exposure today is just not natural at all. We get, you know, way too much blue light, way too much computer screens. I mean, you and I are looking at a computer screen right now. Not enough of the red light, which is like the healing, mood regulating light that we get in the rising and setting sun. So I I have a red light therapy device. I would turn it on right now, but it's a little bit loud. But I use that to kind of recreate the morning and setting sun appropriate, make it more appropriate. And blue light blocking glasses I will use. I'll be putting mine on soon because it's later here. I was wondering, are those? I could tell.
My glasses they are prescription. I'm fairly blind. And maybe I can try and biohack that. We'll see. I did have actually laser vision correction, but clearly it didn't work very well for me.
Like LASIK? Yeah. Okay, well, I got that PRK recently too. Differently. Oh, what'd you get?
It was corneal cross-linking with PRK, so it's a little bit different.
Okay, I've heard of, okay.
That's a whole other topic.
Yeah, I got LASIK done, I think, last year, and it was one of the best decisions I've ever made in my entire life, but it was definitely an interesting, experience.
Yeah, definitely. So for my glasses, my optometrist put on this coating. That's why nice. When I'm tilting up here.
Yeah, I can see it. Yeah, that's it's making. Cool. That's really cool. Yeah, I love it. I approve.
We actually do some similar things. So yes, I start my day and also end my day with my red light therapy going while I'm kind of doing my morning routine in my bathroom, whether I'm taking a bath or the shower, I'll have it going in the room and then I'll flip it around. I have it on a plant stand so it'll get my backside.
That's when I'm what I do.
You do that? Oh my gosh, we're totally geeking out.
I know.
And then this morning I actually had my coffee outside. There's a couple of ducks that have been hanging out at the pond where I live. They came back, Donald and Daisy. this is seriously the life right now. And I got my grounding in. I had my coffee. I actually did my makeup outside with sunlight getting in my eyes. And I feel like a freaking rock star today. I feel so good. And yes, I fasted until I think about 2 o'clock.
That's amazing. Yeah, we're so similar. Yeah. Also, side note, I feel like everybody who has a duck outside, they name it Daisy. My friend, there's a duck outside and she named it Daisy. So many things. Cute.
I think they just like me for my oats though.
Oh, you have some.
I feed them some organic oats. Yeah. They're pretty happy. So they don't fast, but we do.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, I love the idea of cold therapy. And I do live on Vancouver Island, so I'm here in Canada. So I'll either hop in the ocean to get that, or we do actually have a metal tub next to the hot tub outside. So we'll kind of warm up and then we'll jump in that and do some contrast therapy. It sucks. Cold water therapy kind of sucks. But the benefits you get after are incredible. So you wear an Oura ring as well. So what do you notice on the days when you get your cold therapy in?
First of all, my Oura ring, I lost it this past weekend. And I am I'm done.
Oh, no.
And then what's crazy is I interviewed.
I feel kind of naked.
I do. I'm like, where's my ring? It was crazy that I lost it. And then I actually interviewed the CEO, Harpreet, the next day. And I was like, I lost my ring. Ever since I had Oura, I was doing the cold shower and I was never not doing it. So I don't know that I can speak to if there was a change, but I think the biggest benefit for me just that I experience from my perception is it wakes you up and it clears any brain fog you have instantly. Way better than coffee for me with none of the side effects. So it's a game changer for me for sure.
I also noticed that, the odd time I run out of hot water at the end of the shower and I'm washing my hair, and then I end up doing a cold shower without even intending it, my hair is actually softer.
I know. See, everybody wins.
There we go. There we go. And yeah, I definitely love fasting. It's not really for everybody, and I will kind of take it day by day. Sometimes I'll have a banana in the morning or some eggs. But more often than not, I can get away with my coffee, a little MCT oil with a little bit of honey in there. Maybe I'll throw a little stick of butter in my thermos and shake it up and take it on the go with me. But how do you integrate fasting?
I've been doing one meal a day for about 10 years. So I'm pretty extreme with it. I just eat dinner at night, typically over a 4-hour window. And then during the day, I just do water and a little bit of black coffee. So on the intermittent fasting podcast, my other show, we talk a lot about clean fasting. So that's when you do just do the water and coffee. And I find that works really well for me. Although when I started intermittent fasting like a decade ago, I did start, like I wasn't doing it the way I'm doing it now. I was doing more teas and even sweeteners and things like that. And I used to do the Bulletproof coffee. I finally met Dave for the first time, which was really exciting a few weeks ago. And I got to like pick his brain on all of that. But yeah, so I'm pretty simple. The late night eating, despite what they say about late night eating not being good for you, but it's what I do.
Well, that's great. And the long and short of it is you just have to figure out what works for you. So on certain days, you're going to be able to do it. And then certain days, you're not. And it's funny this afternoon, because I had yesterday actually fasted all the way until 5 o'clock. So yes, that kind of dinner time window, I can't always do that though. But today I'm walking around and it's about 2 o'clock. So I'm like, oh, my body's in autophagy. And that's what happens when you're fasting, is your body actually goes into the autophagy state. And that's when you're better able to kind of regenerate and repair. So do you kind of, it's hilarious because you have a background in nutrition and you were probably kind of quote unquote indoctrinated to, you know, keep snacking throughout the day, keep your blood sugar level stable. So can you comment on that?
Yeah, it was definitely a really radical change for me. So growing up, I was always doing a lot of different diets, trying to lose weight. And then when I first started low carb, which I thought was going to be just like another diet, I was really shocked because I experienced so many health benefits beyond weight loss. And that's when I realized that the composition of what you're eating is really doing so much in your body, it's not just about weight gain or weight loss. And that's when I became so obsessed with the science of diet. And yes, I was accustomed to eating 24/7, like thinking that you need to snack. And when I came across the intermittent fasting idea, which was back then, nobody was really talking about it except in the dark rabbit hole tangents of the interwebs in the keto world. So I decided to do it. I thought it was crazy, like the idea of not eating. I thought I was going to be starving. But I decided to do it for a week and I never looked back because it completely changed my paradigm as far as, you know, thinking that you need to eat constantly to have energy. Because the fasted state is an abundant state of energy because you're finally tapping into your fat stores and freeing up all of the stored energy that you have on your body rather than a snack that you just had or your next meal. So it was definitely a radical shift, but now it just makes so much sense to me that it's all good.
I love that you said interweb.
Yeah.
You know, I totally call the internet. One of the things I love about our mutual friend, Cynthia Thurlow, she has a viral TEDx talk on intermittent fasting. We did a really fun IG live today. You can check her out, Cynthia Thurlow. She's a great person to follow when it comes to intermittent fasting as well. And like I said, mutual friend. And in her TED talk, she says that basically, I'm not quoting, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but the concept of women having it be normal to put weight on when you go through menopause, that actually kind of isn't necessarily normal. It is normal if you kind of allow that to happen, but there is a degree of health that can certainly be maintained if you know how to do it. So I feel like, and of course, yes, if you're menopausal, you're listening, you're probably like, who are these two girls talking about menopause? They haven't gone through it yet. They don't know the struggles. But I'll tell you, from what I'm learning from menopausal experts and having spoken on many menopausal optimization health summits, is that what we do leading up to menopause to have very dialed in body, mind, spirit, energy practices will help us navigate those hormonal shifts with a little bit more grace and ease, not to mention everything else that life throws our way. So what's your take on that, Melanie?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I don't want to disregard the powerful role of hormones because they are very, very powerful, but they are influenced so much by our diet and lifestyle and what we're doing epigenetically through, like I said, diet and lifestyle. So I think you like the things that we do can have a very definitive effect on those hormonal changes. And while we can seem like we're fighting against our body with, I'm not a hormonal expert on menopause, but I don't think it is something that you're destined to with the weight gain Because the body naturally, it does what it, like, I don't want to say it wants to, but everything it's doing is it's doing that in order to, it wants to be in a healthy state. So weight gain has a purpose, and weight gain at menopause would have a purpose. And so when you're in that state, if you are more prone to weight gain for whatever reason, you can make a lot of changes to, I don't want to say mitigate, because you're not going against it. But I don't know.
Maybe to bring our bodies more into homeostasis, right?
The balance
that it wants. And it's always going to waver. Your body is never going to cruise at homeostasis. So whatever we can do to give our body the best shot possible, that's going to be a good thing. Let's switch gears a little bit and kind of talk about the younger generation. So we're talking about women in their 30s right now who have little kids and are working from home with their kids at home. And I see this a lot at clients that I work with that are having a really hard go at the moment. So let's talk a little bit about wine, because one of the things I see happening is people are really struggling right now. Some people are having a very hard go with the way things are happening in the world at the moment. And what they're doing is they're kind of leaning into drinking more alcohol. And there's definitely some not so good things about that that can actually make you feel worse, even though you think that having a glass of wine is going to relax you. So I'm curious, Melody, we both have our WSET level one, we enjoy wine and the qualities of wine, but how does alcohol impact you? And based on like your Oura Ring statistics and your sleep, what does alcohol do to you that you notice?
Alcohol. Well, first of all, we already talked about this, but I don't think I've ever met somebody who also had done the WSET like randomly like this. So this is really exciting. So I have a lot of thoughts about alcohol. I think because when I wrote What, When, Wine, a big part of that was analyzing alcohol and wine and the health benefits. And I'm haunted by the fact that when we look at alcohol and correlations to longevity and health, moderate drinking pretty consistently correlates to longevity. And then on top of that, and I'm not saying to be a heavy drinker, but on top of that, heavy drinkers tend to have better longevity than complete abstainers. So I'm not advocating heavy drinking.
Like, is that, sorry, just to question that a little bit, what type of clinical data is that based on?
It's epidemiological, so it's population studies.
Interesting. I'm going to PubMed that after, because I'm a member of Plastic Surgical Nursing Journal and peer reviewer. I write papers myself, so I definitely am going to lean into that. I'd love to see that. Sleep, alcohol tanks my sleep though.
Yeah. So I think I have so many thoughts about this. It definitely affects sleep. It affects sleep in the fact that it can push back your natural cycle when you go through the sleep cycles. So if you have it too late, then yes, you might fall asleep faster, but then everything's sort of pushed back and you tend to wake up alert in the middle of the night. Interestingly, so many things. Genetically, some people are more predisposed to process alcohol.
Yeah,
slower fast metabolizer. That's right. Yeah, slower fast metabolizer. So I think that plays a huge factor in how fast you're metabolizing it. So you want to make sure that you give your body enough time to metabolize the alcohol so it's not impeding your sleep rhythms. So what I see, for example, on my Oura Ring, and I definitely see this like when I had it, was that if I have, for me, like a glass of wine and I have it early enough, I usually have it before my dinner and then I have my dinner and there's a substantial amount of time before I go to bed, I still get really great sleep on my Oura Ring. I wake up with a good readiness score, like everything's great. If I have too much or I have it too late, it's like the Oura Ring knows. And I think it's very, very different for different people. So this is really funny. I did a genetic test report recently where it was for all food and it was your tolerance for different foods and drink. And
which
I was
one
based,
did you do?
It's self-decode.
Cool.
I don't know if he's amazing. it was really funny because it basically told me, because I have a lot of food sensitivities and food is always a interesting challenge for me, but it basically showed that I was like carbs, everything food related was like in the red. Like it was like, you have problems with this, but alcohol, I was like all green. I was like, I pretty much knew that. Like I can tolerate alcohol really well. So I think it's really individual is the point of that. And then we were talking about this before, you and I, before we started. Conventional wine and alcohol, especially in the US, is like not – so there's so many health benefits of wine, but it's not – we're not talking about most conventional wine in the US, which is actually – it's higher sugar, higher alcohol, full of additives, pesticides. I mean, there's that study they talk about all the time. Like in California, they tested all these different wineries, including organic ones, and they all had pesticides in them. So I think it's really important that you are vetting your wine and doing low sugar, low alcohol, organic, free of pesticides, free of mold. But yeah, I think there is definitely a place for alcohol and a healthy diet. And then if you look at the relationship to weight gain and weight loss, that's a fascinating rabbit hole. I don't know if you want to go down that, but I think it's very much different than what a lot of people think about
it. Let's do it. Let's go there.
So I think a lot of people think that alcohol means weight gain. Like one of the first things I often hear when people are trying to lose weight is, oh, well, I got to cut out the alcohol. And the interesting thing is, I mean, alcohol, you can't gain fat from alcohol. There's not a metabolic process for that to happen. It's immediately burned. So any weight gain that you get from drinking is from what you ate while you drank. It's not from the actual alcohol. So, and then the alcohol itself, the studies on, again, it's correlational, but female drinkers tend to be lower weight than non-drinkers. And then the alcohol has a thermic effect, so it actually can like burn calories while you're drinking it. So it all basically alcohol is not necessarily the cause of weight gain. It's the decisions and other food that you're eating when you drink it. So if you have a healthy relationship with wine and it, you know, it feels good and you like having your glass at night and you, if it's about weight loss, you want to lose weight, I wouldn't look to the wine as the first thing to get rid of. I would look at the food choices and the diet and lifestyle beyond that. They even did a study where this was an alcoholics in a hospital ward setting, but they would give them 2,000 extra calories per day of alcohol and they didn't gain any weight from it. Cause there's just not a metabolic pathway for that. So it's pretty, pretty fascinating.
That's interesting. Yeah. If I am going to have wine, it is going to be probably like a French organic wine or dry farm wines, but I tend to do better. So in the summer, if I want to have a cocktail, I'll make myself 100% agave tequila with a little bit of lime, with a little bit of orange juice. And that's kind of my jam. I seem to do well with 100% agave tequila.
Yeah.
And I also seem to do well with Guinness. I love Guinness so much. And one of the reasons why I think I seem to do okay with Guinness, if I have one Guinness later in the evening, it actually doesn't tank my score, sleep score. But if I have two, then it certainly does. But it's also grown in Europe, right? And in the UK and Ireland, they don't use glycophosphates as their fertilizer. So I kind of wonder if it's because of that. So a lot of North American alcohol, so wine and beer, it's got all these other additives. Like commercial wine, there's 70 to 80 extra things in it that doesn't need to be listed on the label. So that's kind of hard. Hey.
Yeah. And if you think, I think about this all the time, cause think about like tinctures or alcohol based medicines. We take them that way because of the ultimate absorption ability of that. So like wine or an alcoholic drink, I mean, it's set up to infuse you with whatever is in it. So, and I think that like glyphosate is so saturated, especially in the US. And I mean, I think it's one of the largest factors and probably a lot of the health issues that we have today because of how it affects the gut microbiome. And it actually, I was interviewing somebody recently and I learned that it I think the body confuses it for glycine. So it completely just messes up our entire amino acid profile. I think it's huge. So yeah, that could be a thing for you for the drinking from Europe, not having as much of that problem.
Yeah, I'm sticking to it. So the long and short of it, my opinion, and I think it's so important that we all have our own opinions, because honestly, when we entertain both sides or more than two sides, we can actually come to an even greater conclusion, which is really important for us to remember that having an opinion is actually a good thing, and not to be afraid of sharing your opinion. Just, you know, that can correlate to events that are happening in the world at the moment. But I definitely do see, like I said, the young moms having a really hard go. And if you're listening to this and you've been having the wine late in the evening, maybe just reconsider that. If you want to have your glass of wine, maybe have it while you're cooking dinner. That little tip of maybe having it a little earlier, I think that's kind of nice. And then just maybe making sure you're going for maybe like a French organic wine, because typically the organic wines coming out of France are going to be a little bit better than the North American organic wines. What have you heard?
Yeah, I only drink dry farm wines, which I don't, your listeners are probably familiar if you talk about it a lot.
Yeah, but I've had Todd White on the show.
Oh yeah, Todd's great.
The CEO of it.
Yeah, I've had him on my shows as well. He's amazing. Their company is just amazing. So at home I only drink dry farm wines, but when I'm out at a restaurant, I look up every single wine on the list and hope I can find an organic one. You'd be surprised. A lot of them, if you Google, just like really quick, just Google the winery and then type in organic and Google and see what, this is when you're at a restaurant, see if it comes up immediately as being organic. But that's what I gravitate towards, is the French European, if all else fails. Yeah. Like you said, the tips of having it. And if you think about it, I think having a glass of wine, especially before dinner, is a great way to like prep your body for the digestive process. It can lower your blood sugar. It can have that calming effect. And then if you have it before dinner, then by the time you're done with dinner, it's the alcohol should be processed, and hopefully you can make it work so it doesn't affect your sleep.
That's great. Yeah, because sleep, really, that's when we are regenerating ourselves. When we're talking about anti-aging, it's really important. So why don't we switch gears to talking about hormones? So what role do endocrine disruptors in skincare and makeup play in our current health issues?
Yeah, I think this is so huge. More and more each day, I'm just can't get over how important endocrine disruptors are, important in not a good way, in the effect that they're having on our health. So basically, endocrine disruptors are compounds and chemicals that mess with our hormones, and they just mess with the entire messaging of our body. So there's something we really, really want to avoid at all costs. And they are rampant in conventional skincare and makeup, especially in the US. So in Europe, they've banned thousands of compounds that have been linked to being endocrine disruptors, being things called obesogens, which are actually compounds which can literally cause your body to store and gain weight, and also carcinogens linked to cancer. And in the US, they've only banned around 10 of these compounds, which is just insane. And And on top of that, there's basically no regulation by the FDA or any government party of skincare makeup. So most people are putting on skincare makeup, especially females, every day. And that is a chronic, constant exposure to these compounds that you're giving them direct access straight into your bloodstream. And a lot of the problems with the toxicity studies is they often look at like doses that you wouldn't be exposed to normally, or they don't take into account the fact that we are chronically putting this on every single day. They don't take into account the, it's called the cocktail effect. So basically one compound by itself might not be as bad, but when you have all these different ones, they can work together synergistically to create more issues. So I used to mostly just be obsessed with cleaning up my food and my environment, but then I started to realize, skincare makeup is really, really huge. And, yeah, I just think it's shocking, honestly. And the one of the really sad things, especially for moms, like you were talking about, is these chemicals, our body registers them as toxins, and so it tends to store them in our fat cells to protect us. And then when we get pregnant as a female, actually the first baby well, all babies, but it happens the most with the first child. That's actually a huge detox for the mom because we excrete all these compounds through the placenta into the baby. So if you're at all concerned about the health of your future children, it's really important to clean up your skincare and makeup from these endocrine disruptors.
I love how you said that because I feel like this is kind of like the missing link in young women right now. We're not recognizing that the decisions that we make in our teens, 20s, and 30s impact future progeny and, you know, our future lineages. So it's really important to not just listen to the dermatologists that you are hearing talking about these over-the-counter skincare brands. And we're talking about the brands that you can easily find on your drugstore shelves. That being said, this isn't medical advice. This is educational information only. If you think you have a medical condition, you must seek the guidance of a licensed physician. But I, every single day, see the skin experts talking about and promoting toxic products. And I think that they're really not really up with the times. They think that these products are just well tolerated and they're inexpensive, so they're going to recommend them. But then there was a 2020 study that just came out talking about the 9 to 14 known allergens in, you know, the top three over-the-counter skincare brands. So we need to avoid things like parabens, phthalates, sulfates, artificial dyes, fragrances, and obviously not support companies that test on animals, but rather consenting adults. And it's so crazy, Melanie, when I do consultations for clients, you know, virtually and in person, so many people are layering like two or three serums, a moisturizer, and then the sunscreen. And the sunscreen is usually a chemical sunscreen. So I totally hear you. And I love that you brought this up, that when we layer products that aren't compatible, they are actually going to have chemical interactions. And I actually did a consult with someone and she would use 7 different serums
each day.
I'm like, goodness, how much are you spending on your skincare? But also there's probably some interactions. So I'm really happy that you brought that up.
Yeah, and one of the most fascinating things, Dr. Jason Fung recently released the Cancer Code. And after I read that, I finally understood, like, it was like this light bulb moment. I finally understood why things like endocrine disruptors and skincare and makeup are causing cancer. And it's basically because the cells in our body, when they get exposed to like just a little bit of toxin, constantly. So if a cell in our body got like whammed with toxins and like it was so toxic that it just killed the cell would die, or it would be so damaged that the body would naturally kill it itself through a process called apoptosis. If it gets damaged just a tiny bit, then the body repairs it. But when our cells are constantly exposed to just a moderate amount of toxins, like in our skincare and makeup, the body doesn't kill the cell. Like it lets the cell stay there, but it doesn't repair the cell either. And so the cell basically can no longer exist in a healthy relationship with our body, and it has to do whatever it can do to survive. And that's when it becomes cancerous. So it starts generating energy by itself. It starts spreading throughout the body. It basically goes rogue and becomes very selfish. So it's literally this chronic exposure to these carcinogens and these endocrine disruptors, which I think are, you know, connected to cancer, which is kind of scary.
And also the changing of our genetic material that can be elicited through different proteins, which can actually impact gene expression down the line. And we don't always think about that, especially with current events, that what we choose to do may have impacts down the line. And it's always important to look at the data ourselves. There's so much published data on parabens, but right away, don't use products with parabens. And I want you guys to also not use any chemical sunscreen filters anymore. So that's avobenzone, oxybenzone. Those are the two really common ones. Sometimes we'll see sunscreens that have like a zinc and also avobenzone. So that's also not good. Unfortunately, those can still get stuck in there. But yeah, there certainly is published data to support that parabens and chemical sunscreen filters are known endocrine disruptors. So yeah, keep it clean, but we still want efficacious stuff too. Yeah. And then with makeup, some of the things hidden in makeup are going to be things like coal tar dyes, talcs, stuff like that. And I really feel for young women right now, how targeted are you on your social media of all of these different beauty supplements and makeup and skincare brands? I get hounded by them. I'm curious if you do too.
It's really overwhelming. I mean, I personally just use Beauty Counter because I'm really obsessed with their mission, and they were founded on a mission to remove endocrine disruptors from makeup. It's nice that I have a safe brand that I can go to that kind of deals with everything for me. But on top of that, I use like the Environmental Working Group to look up all the different products, and you can see the toxicity potential. But honestly, with as far as getting hounded with the different products, I just don't even consider them. It's like I wonder if maybe since I'm not even looking them up or Googling them, then maybe the algorithm's not throwing them at me. Cause I just don't even like for most brands, I'm just like, I'm just not gonna listen. But yeah, it's sad too, especially seeing all these products, you know, promoted and thrown at us to promote beauty when a lot of them are doing not so much good for us in the long term. So it's upsetting. But
I certainly have a number of my clients, they ask me, hey, Rachel, can you meet with my teenage daughter, right? Or my teenage son? And because what the younger generation, I mean, heck, we're still pretty young, but we're talking like teens, right? They're buying so many products online right now, and also from these kind of like department stores that just have a lot of fancy marketing behind them, but they're totally toxic. And a teen is basically a walking hormone anyways. So I just hear so many stories and meet with young women that are spending a small fortune on toxic beauty products, and they don't know any better. They're just getting targeted through social media ads and marketing. And I always get such a kick out of when I get targeted by beauty supplements. One of them is actually like this gold pill. And I reached out to the company and I said, hey, can you send me a list of your ingredients and your non-medicinal ingredients? And they actually, one of them emailed me back and basically just said, oh, this ingredient is good for this. This ingredient is good for that. This ingredient is good for that. But there's no third-party lab testing. So please do not buy those gimmicky, you know, celebrity skincare, beauty supplements. What's your take on that stuff right now?
Yeah, I'm very skeptical of, like you said, I can't even tell you how many times I email companies and ask for their list of ingredients. And it's just, especially they're not going to show like the dosage, or it's hard to know what the therapeutic potential is of any of these compounds. And then on top of that, one thing I didn't mention yet, heavy metals are often in skincare and makeup. So that was the catalyst for me coming to clean skincare and makeup. Was I had mercury toxicity and I was like, I must remove all heavy metals from my entire life. And that's when I realized that our makeup is actually a huge, huge source. Lead is rampant in conventional lipstick. They did a study recently and like 70% of lipsticks were high in lead, and the half-life of lead is up to 30 years. So that means if you put on some lipstick with lead in it, like 30 years later, half of the lead that you put on might have left your bones, assuming it got deposited in your bones when you put it on. So very shocking. And then a lot of like natural makeup is often made with natural materials that are high in heavy metals. So people often use natural makeup thinking it's better, but it's not tested for heavy metals. So that's another compound. There's so many problems.
Yeah. And heavy metals in our bodies actually interact with the ions in our body, mm-hmm. and, you know, protons and electrons, they meet every single thing in our body, from hormones to making your muscles fire, to electrons in your mitochondria, making your ATP. So heavy metals definitely are something to pay attention to. And yeah, just let me know if anything is kind of jumping to mind in current events that you've seen in marketing or certain beauty trends.
As far as like being an issue and everything? Probably. I mean, people still really, really turn to like retinol, for example, for anti-aging. And one of the issues with that, and I've been in tune with this ever since I was young. I remember hearing the mechanism of action of retinol being that it increased turnover of your skin. And I remember thinking, well, wouldn't that be aging you faster if it's like making you, you know, to have that faster turnover? And that actually is likely the case. So that's something to stay away from. The, I just don't think it's, I think so much of our outer beauty, and I don't think beauty comes from, you know, the exterior at all, but so much of it can be affected by your diet and lifestyle. And so I think so many people, kind of like people want to turn to supplements to fix their health issues rather than address the foundation of food. I don't encourage people to run to all these treatments and skincare products as the ultimate solution when you can see a huge difference from your diet and your hormones and all of those factors. So, I mean, I know for me, because I had really, really awful skin growing up, acne and things like that. And when I changed my diet, it was a huge difference. And now I have like really amazing skin that I'm grateful for. But if I eat foods that don't agree with me or processed foods or dairy, for me personally, like it shows up automatically on my face. So, which is kind of nice. It's kind of like a window to what is or is not working for my body.
So we just had a question come through from Linda. Retinol ages your skin. So I do want to clarify this because there's decades of research on this. Vitamin A is a very potent antioxidant. So actually what it does is it helps to scavenge free radicals in the skin. And free radicals are what cause cell mutation and accelerated aging. So retinol does not age your skin. It's actually the opposite. So I just wanted to clear that up because that was a really great question. But so many times retinol is actually used improperly, right? So people get a retinol and then they get redness, they get dryness, they get flaking, and they don't have the right basic skincare routine to basically mitigate that and the photosensitivity. So a lot of people actually could use a retinol and then the next day they're not using sunscreen and they're more photosensitive. So there's definitely a method to the madness to incorporating vitamin A, incorporating dermal rolling, but it does actually speed up the cell cycle. So as we, in our 30s, our cell cycle is about a month and it actually slows down as we age a little bit. And through that slowing down, it takes extra time for the cells to then make their way up to the surface level. And when that time is extended, there can be more kind of like lackluster effect on the skin. So sometimes it's good to speed up that cell turnover because aging slows it down. And that can be done through antioxidants, through gentle exfoliation and things like that. But it does, vitamin A needs to be done properly and not just kind of haphazardly. One of the other beauty trends I'm seeing, Melanie, is the fox eye lift. I'm sure you've seen the Bella Hadid before and after photos.
Oh, what does it look like? I haven't seen it.
I've done a video on the fox eye trend, and I was actually reached out to by another aesthetic nursing journal to write a paper on, you know, trendy treatments. So people are getting these thread lifts in their brows and their eyes to give more of like this kind of like Spock fox eye lift.
Oh man.
Drives me crazy. You guys, yeah. Y'all have to check out my episode on the fox eye trend, but beauty trends, they come and go. What is going to really stand the test of time is more of like a healthy look, keeping your facial ratios within the ideal ratios and not overdoing it with, say, injectables and other rejuvenation products. But everything does have a place. Melanie, do you have any closing remarks for today?
Just now I want to, so I have a question for you. So this speeding up the cell turnover of the retinol, so you don't know if that does not have a effect on the long-term longevity? Like, I was under the impression that ultimately it actually is aging your skin faster, but now I'm going to have to research that.
Yeah, it's been studied since the 80s and 90s. It actually is helpful for anti-aging because of its potent antioxidant qualities.
Okay. So like, okay, I'm going to have to do more research on what I was reading about it.
But a lot, you might've come across information that it could speed up aging if you're not using it properly and not using a sunscreen the next day. Because it can
from the photo damage.
Exactly. It can set people up to be photosensitive if they're not using the right moisturizer and sunscreen the next day. And we had a question come through from Linda. Do you need to wear sunscreen after using retinol when you spend hours working on the computer? Yes, you do. Sunscreen every single day. And it's advised to only use retinol in the evening. You don't want to use it during the day because of the photosensitive properties. And sunscreen during the day while you're still working on your computer, because the blue light from our screens is reaching about 3 times deeper in our skin than the UVA and UVB rays that we actually get outside. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that is insane. That is insane.
All right. So Melanie, tell everybody a little bit about how they can learn more about you, where they can hang out with you.
Sure. So you can go to my main website is melanieavalon.com. I have the 2 top iTunes podcasts. So I mentioned them, the Intermittent Fasting podcast and the Melanie Avalon Biohacking podcast. And then I have 3 Facebook groups. One is IF Biohackers, one is Clean Beauty and Safe Skincare, and the one is, I don't even remember the name. It's for people who have lumens or CGMs or Biosense devices, people who are looking to monitor all their different ways of fat burning and ketones. Basically, if you search Melanie Avalon group and Facebook, the 3 groups should come up. And then I'm on Instagram. And yeah, I think that's all the things.
Yeah, I'll definitely be picking your brain for CGM. That's going to be my next biohacking.
It's yeah, I think I probably went through 6 or 7 cycles. It's so addicting. You're going to be so addicted. Now I'm taking a break. I'm like, I'm good. But it's one of the most eye-opening things I think that you can do. So
Yeah, I know. It's when we understand all of these really cool things that we can optimize our health, it can just put us down so many kind of cool rabbit holes, but it's kind of nice just to integrate and test maybe 1 or 2 things out at a time so that you don't overwhelm yourself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, CGMs on Beauty and the Biohacker, we've actually interviewed Kara. And so that was a really cool episode. Mm-hmm. But I can't wait to pick your brain a little bit more on that next time we meet. Well,
yeah.
Thank you so much, Melanie, for hanging out today. We talked a little bit about wine. We talked a little bit about fasting and longevity. We talked about skin. And I wouldn't mind ending this episode with, what's your PM routine like?
Oh, goodness. You don't even want to know. I will turn on the red light. I usually do an infrared sauna session, followed by a cold shower. And then I have like my meal, my wine, my meal. And then for sleep is so huge. So I transition through different blue light blocking glasses to mitigate the light. I, when I actually sleep, I use earplugs and an eye mask and a chili pad to keep the mattress cool, blackout curtains. I have an EMF canopy to block EMF, turn off the Wi-Fi. And I shut down all social media once I hit a certain time. And I don't text, I don't get on Facebook. I just shut all that off to wind down. So
yes. I love it. I feel like I'd be right at home at your place and yeah. You'd be right at home at my place too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I love my wind down routine.
I know. Wow. It's so funny when people ask me about, oh, Rachel, what's your PM routine? I'm like, you really?
I know. I know.
How much time do we have?
I know. It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah,
it's actually pretty comical. I'll just end our conversation with this. My skincare routine is actually probably the least time thing that I do in regards to my PM routine. And, isn't that hilarious? It's like, it would be the longest, but it literally just takes a couple of minutes and unless you're Dremel rolling. And then it's more like a 15, 20 minute kind of thing. But
yeah, no, same. It's like, so all the other things. Yeah. So.
Well, I can't wait to geek out with you again, Melanie. It's been really fun having you on the show. And I just want to thank everybody for hanging out with us today. It's been a pleasure having you join us. And be sure to subscribe to the Rachel Varga official Facebook page, YouTube channel, and on the Rachel Varga podcast, and hit the bell so that you know when I go live next. And you can check out all things how I can help you with both your at-home and in-clinic options at rachelvarga.ca. And I can't wait to hang out with you all in the next episode right here on the Rachel Varga podcast. Thanks for hanging out, Melanie.
Thanks, Rachel. This was amazing. Thank you.